Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. At least some of the big news in Pierre today is happening away from the Capitol building as the court battle over legal marijuana begins at the Hughes County Courthouse. And it may seem like we've covered this ground before, but abortion and transgender legislation leads the news in the early days of the 2021 state legislative session. Our Dakota political junkies today are Jonathan Ellis and John Schaff. Ellis is an investigative reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and he's joining us today from Pierre. Welcome, John. Thanks for being here.
Lori, I'm at the beautiful, majestic Capitol building today.
Also with us, John Schaff. He's professor of political science at Northern State University in Aberdeen, and he's joining us today from the Tom and Danielle Amen Foundation Studio on Northern State's campus. Professor Schaff, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Do we have Jonathan Ellis?
Now we're in. Live from the Capitol.
I called you Jonathan. I thought you were just, you know, holding out until I got your name right there, John and Jonathan.
No, I'm here. This is a beautiful place you guys got.
Describe it for our listeners. Take us into this spacious, lovely Capitol press room.
Well, I was describing it to Lee here that it reminds me of a bomb shelter that my friend had in high school that we would party in. So anyway, nice place.
All right. But you sound great, and the audio is what matters. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening today, and I'll start with you, Jonathan, with at the Hughes County Courthouse regarding Amendment A. Walk us through exactly, what is being decided today, or how are things kicking off today?
Well, this will be sort of the first step in the judicial process, the judicial challenge to Amendment A. And circuit court judge will hear arguments. The issues have been very well briefed on why the opponents think that it should be declared unconstitutional, basically. And then, of course, on the other side, there's issues about why the will of the voters should be respected and why, in fact, the measure passes constitutional muster. I mean, one of the big issues will be this sort of single issue. Constitutional requirement, and that was passed in 2018 and basically says that constitutional amendments can encompass more than one subject. And the opponents are saying that in fact this marijuana measure encompassed many different subjects, and on the other side, the proponents who sponsored this say no, they drafted this language knowing that that one subject rule was in place, and that they did so very broadly, and that basically this is about cannabis. That's the subject. So, the judge is going to have to parse through these arguments and make some decisions there. And of course, I think the judge will want to be have a very good record how this proceeds, because we all know that this is eventually, very soon probably, going to the Supreme Court.
Right. Tell me a little bit about this notion of who has the authorization to bring this challenge forward. Can you explain that to me?
Well, that's going to be an issue. One of the things that the pro-Amendment A people are saying is that they're standing, that the Pennington County Sheriff and the superintendent of the Highway Patrol, Colonel Miller, they don't have standing to bring this. And they sort of have an interesting argument there that they can't bring this in their official capacity. And they have, interestingly, you didn't see Governor Noem issue her executive order authorizing this until well after the lawsuit had already been, after the lawsuit had been filed. And that, to some legal observers, is an indication that they realized that they messed this up. Mm-hmm. And so standing, as I pointed out in an article I wrote on this, standing is the first issue I think that the judge is going to have to address. I mean, if you don't have standing, then all the other arguments are moot, right? I mean, so I think that the standing issue will be the first thing that she's going to have to determine. And then if she thinks in her mind that legally that they don't have even standing to challenge us, then as far as I can tell, we're done. Of course, then it would be appealed to the Supreme Court.
And could that be decided today? Standing? I mean, how complicated is deciding standing, I guess? Do you have any concept going in?
Well, of all the briefs I've read, it's pretty complicated. So she's going to have to, let's be honest. I think that she's probably done a lot of research already. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been very well briefed. You have the sites that both sides are using to make their arguments. So you know, she's not going to go into this having not read and not done a lot of legal research, and probably her clerk or clerks have done some legal research on this. So I expect her to be very well prepared. Obviously, the Supreme Court, when it gets to the Supreme Court, they would be very well prepared. Now, if she were to say that this on a standing issue, she would say if she were to rule at some now or at some point in the near future that they don't, that the state didn't have standing, that the two law officers didn't have standing, that issue then of course would be appealed to the Supreme Court. And if the Supreme Court decided to, you know, overturn that, then it would probably be sent back down to the Circuit Court, where she would then again, the judge would again have to address then those broader arguments. So this could ping pong around a little bit, sure. Or it could just go straight to the Supreme Court. So we'll see. I mean, today's obviously a big day. It's not going to be the final day, but it is a big day in the start of this.
Yeah. Dr. Schaff, there's a lot at stake here, not only for Amendment A and the subject of cannabis in South Dakota, but for ballot initiatives in general. We see more conversation and legislation coming out of lawmakers once again trying to address what they see are flaws with that issue. Tell us a little bit about what is at stake and whether or not this process of voters having a direct say needs to be reformed.
Well, part of it is principle, part of it is politics. Part of the politics of it is that over the last handful of election cycles, particular interests in the state who know that they probably can't get a piece of legislation passed through our legislature due to the partisan composition of it have gone to ballot measures. And with mixed success, but with some success, and Amendment A is an example of that, of a success. On the other hand, then obviously the people who oppose those things have introduced various measures to try to make it more difficult to get things on the ballot, limits on when people are getting petitions signed, who can actually be a petitioner, who can sit at the mall and hold a petition, get people to sign it. And some of that stuff has passed. Some of it was declared unconstitutional. But there's partially a partisan interest in making it more difficult to get things on the ballot versus some other people want it to be easier to get things on the ballot. On the principled side of things is, you know, there's a reason. I was just teaching Federalist Papers to my American government students this morning. There's a reason why James Madison likes representative democracy, not direct democracy, because direct democracy works too much on passion, too much of a knee jerk. And when we go through a process in a legislature, there are checks. There's the inefficiencies are there for a reason, to make sure that when we do something, we're considering all angles, all interests. And sometimes we've had an issue with ballot measures that are sloppily written, that I think we have passed some measures that are unconstitutional. The legislature cleaned those up in retrospect before they got implemented. There is also a principled point to be made that we have a legislature for a reason, and that is the ordinary way in which law gets made. And we have committee processes, and we have two chambers and a government or a governor, and we have veto overrides and all these sorts of things, precisely because we think we will get better legislation that will better represent the interests of the people and will better protect our rights than when the people vote on it on their own. But obviously there's an argument in the other direction about having government directly, more directly responsive to the people. And that's obviously the argument that pro-ballot measure people are making.
Yeah, so a lot, it's a big day, a lot is set to unfold, but also it's part of this long ongoing conversation. And John, you said there that because of the party makeup, and you know, we often talk about people bringing these issues that they can't get through in peer, but Brendan Johnson, who is part of this litigation, also pointed out on Twitter the night of the last election how popular this was, more popular than any Democratic candidate. So you could also make the argument that the party that carries the flag for this legislation has been so unappealing in South Dakota that they have been unable to get the bodies in peer to make a difference. A lot of challenges for people on both sides of the aisle to refine how they listen to voters, it seems. And that brings us to some ground that we seem to cover every legislative session, and that is the transgender legislation, Senate Bill 1076, which has a little bit of an interesting unfolding. Jonathan Ellis, we thought this was done in committee. It's a 1076, which would indicate it maybe shouldn't be on the calendar quite yet, but it is. And some people are crying foul about the process here. Tell us a little bit about this legislation that blocks the ability to make changes to a person's birth certificate.
Well, yeah, it would require, it's from Representative Fred Deutsch, who has been active, obviously, on this issue for several legislative sessions. In this particular bill would require that a person's biological sex be on their birth certificate. And I think, you know, his point was, I think that he tried to frame it as judges were having trouble with petitions, didn't have clear guidance on how to react when they were receiving petitions for to change that on birth certificates. And of course, the transgender community is very upset at the proposal, and they thought they had killed it in committee. And then yesterday, when we were on the House floor, they successfully, it's called the smoke out process, and they successfully were able to get the bill reconsidered on the entire House floor. It happens. It's part of the process. There is a rule that allows for a smoke out, so it's not like it was something that was underhanded. I mean, there is a process for this. It is a little more unusual. Representative Deutsch was able to get a third of his compatriots to vote in favor of bringing it down to the floor, basically bypassing the committee recommendation and reviving the bill. So today we will see a debate on whether or not it's calendared, and if it's going to be, if it's got to pass 50% plus one there, and if it's calendared, more than likely, I mean, they could calendar it for whenever, but more than likely we will hear a debate on it again today on the House floor. I think they'll just want to take up the issue if it in fact passes. So it would have to pass twice. It would have to pass once to get calendared, and there'll be debate about that, and then it would have to pass again on its merits before it would be then possibly sent over for the Senate. So I expect an interesting process on the House floor today over, again, a very controversial issue that, as we've indicated, we've kind of heard, we've had iterations of this issue for the last several legislative sessions.
Right. And I looked at this bill, and it's extensive. It's several pages long. It's not just, no changes to birth certificates can be made. It has a lot about what the writers of the bill say, objective gender designation and subjective gender identity. And it's definitely laying out some language that people would have concerns with. John Schaff, do you think there is the energy among lawmakers when there are so many things to be discussed and decided to take up an issue like this in the 2021 legislative session? Clearly there was enough juice to get it smoked out of the committee, but what do you think once it gets to that larger body?
It seems like this is one of a handful of issues that what happens is you get a small number of legislators who care passionately about a particular issue, and that is why it keeps coming up over and over. I think in this case, there are national trends going on. It's responding to national trends and concerns of things that are happening across the nation. But you could use the same analogy. And we've got one again this year. Every legislative session, there's a bill that wants to take the sales tax off of food and or clothing. Right? It happens every time, and it never passes. Right? Mm-hmm. Because there are a small number of legislators who care passionately about that particular item. And I know we've talked about this before. One of the nice things about our legislature, whatever you think about the sales tax issue, the transgendered issue, or whatever, is every bill at least gets a hearing. And so even if there is a minority of people and it's unlikely that it's going to pass, it at least gets a hearing. No matter what the issue is. And of course, the issue here with this birth certificate bill is going to be precisely, can they get a broad enough support, not just to reconsider the bill, but as I think Lee was saying at the top of the hour in the news report, can they get enough people to actually get it on the calendar, which is a higher threshold? And then even if they do that, then you have to pass the thing. and it's a real question whether there's a majority who support it. Some evidence that it didn't pass committee would indicate that there's not that support, but the committee is not the whole body, and it's not unheard of for something to lose in committee, get resurrected on the floor, and then pass again. Such things do happen.
So, John Schaff, think you're talking to your students now, and one of them raises their hands and says, so you mean that I have to, you know, as an advocate of LGBTQ human rights, I have to watch for this every single session because they can just bring this discriminatory, litigation or legislation every single time. And you're going to say to them, yeah, you have to show up for democracy every single day, right? What would you say to students who are frustrated with the fact that, you know, this is discriminatory legislation, and again they have to be willing to mobilize, show up, try to figure out a new system, try to get to peer, try to contact their lawmakers? Respond to that from a classroom perspective. Yeah.
I think there are two things. One is, you know, as we say, you know, democracy isn't always won by the people with the most numbers. It's won by the people who show up. And this is part of being an engaged, active citizen, is showing up. And so, yes, these are the virtues of a democratic citizen, is being vigilant in protection of your rights, keeping an eye on these things. Then your description of the bill, Lori, involves some question begging, because I bet if you asked Fred Deutsch, he would not say it's discriminatory. He would say, I mean, here's an example. Is it discriminatory to say we have a bill that says there are no four-sided triangles? No, that's just a statement of fact. Triangles have three sides. I bet what Fred Deutsch would say is that what he wants to do is to write into law that which is true. Now, other people disagree with him, and that's why we have a process, and we do hash this out, it seems, at least, you know, last three, four sessions, there's at least something that hashed this out. But again, this is, it's why I say it's a big question across the country, because it deals with things like, what does it mean to be male? What does it mean to be female? What is a sexual nature? Is a sexual nature something that is rooted in biology, or is it something that is more conceptually in my head? And every law discriminates. Every law makes distinctions. That's what discrimination means. Then we have to figure out, are the distinctions that the law makes, are they just and unjust or unjust? And we have to figure out, in this case, are the distinctions that the law in this case or other similar laws, are they just? Are they capturing a reality, or are they something that they're unjust, or there's something about reality that they're not capturing? And so they, in that sense, they're not capturing the fullness of justice.
Right. And just for clarity, I know that you're not saying a triangle is equivalent to a transgender person. So equivalencies are always difficult when you get into this territory. I want to make sure that we make time for this New York Times opinion video that just dropped, I think, this morning. And I'm sure I haven't checked social media as I prepare for the show, but I'm sure it's being widely shared, because the New York Times opinion writers, call Governor Kristi Noem intellectually dishonest in this, and scary, and use some other words for her that are pretty strong. Jonathan Ellis, you watched that video, and some of your initial thoughts about how the New York Times went after Governor Noem.
Yeah, the New York Times, as well as a lot of other media establishments in let's just call them lockdown states, probably, have gone after Governor Noem and other governors who, I think, took a more relaxed approach to dealing with the pandemic. As I described it to you, I mean, it was a real fang job. They went after her, going, you know, they pointed out some statistics, you know, how bad it got in South Dakota in November, October, you know, in the fall. We all know how bad it got. We know that at a point in time, probably in late November, early December, the state was among the global leaders in terms of per capita deaths. That has certainly relaxed since then, but I mean, they make that point. To me, and I'm going to voice some frustrations with my own profession here, I think that journalists have handled reporting on this pandemic, and it's very poorly. There's been this race at times to compare states. with other states, and it's very difficult to do that in a situation where in November, where as this Times video points out, you know, cases here are spiking. They don't point out that they're also spiking regionally in states that are controlled both by Republican and Democratic governors. We should point out regional spike, and now that the now that those cases are spiking in other parts of the region. California recorded more than 700 deaths yesterday. So it's just very unfair to me, and just almost journalistic malpractice to just take a point in time in something that's highly fluid and say, you know, these people failed and these people didn't.
I'm going to jump in here, Jonathan, because we are short of time. Oh, I apologize for that interruption, but thank you so much for being here with us today. From Pierre, John Schaaf from Aberdeen, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.